The following program is a production of KHNS. Its content does not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the Board of Directors and staff of Lynn Cannell Broadcasting Incorporated, the licensee.
Welcome to Talk Around Town. I'm Deborah Schnabel, your guide through today's talk about things that matter to us here in Haines. Stay tuned for our current news analysis with Tom Morfitt and Margaret Friedenauer. Today's talking topic, community facilities planning, interpreting the survey, and looking ahead. Our guests will be Haynesboro Executive Assistant to the Manager, Darcy Colbeck, Consultant Lanice Henderson-Fontenot, and Public Facilities Master Plan Advisory Board Member Ron Jackson. We'll check in with the American Bald Eagle Festival, and my name is, introduces us to, well, stay tuned. This is Talk Around Town. Good morning to you, Margaret and Tom.
Hi, Deborah.
How are you doing? Good.
Fine.
Everyone's happy.
Winter's here.
Everyone's happy. My dog is exhilarated. Loves the snow.
Guess that's one word for it.
Yeah. Oh, now, Margaret, you lived in Fairbanks.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Oh, I left.
I think with this snow, we can say that we had this might be the shortest summer and that we ever had.
Right. It was a beautiful fall.
It was a beautiful fall.
About 2 weeks of it.
We're getting close to where we can no longer get up to my cabin, mm-hmm. Which is the earliest it's ever happened before was November 15th, which was last year.
All right.
The first time we were snowed in. So.
Okay, let's wrap her up here. It's been 2 weeks since I've talked to you. You weren't here last
Talk
Around Town. It was Margaret holding us down, but let's talk. What's been happening in the last couple of weeks?
Tom,
well,
I know you have something to say.
Tom does have something he wants to talk about.
Well, I think in winter, we talk about the weather and we talk about politics, and it's a big politics year. We have a national election. We have statewide elections. We have the closest legislative races that we've had since the last redistricting. I think we can safely say that this is the most competitive race for our House and our seat in the House and our seat in the Senate. I think it says a lot about the power of incumbency and power of money in politics, that we really only see these tight races statewide after the seats have been shuffled and people have to go out and people in this case, in the House case, 53% of the district is now Sitka, which our representative Bill Thomas has never represented before. So that's 53% of the votes are there. He has to go there, meet new people, talk to, you know, recruit new votes.
Mm-hmm. And that's where his challenger is from. So he kind of has that.
And on the Senate side, I think it's 23 or 29% of Albert Kukesh's district is represented in the district he's running for. So he's got like 70% new people. He's got to go out and try to woo. The last time, 10 years ago, we had the race between Tim June and Bill Thomas. And it was decided by 70 or 80 votes. And it was a recount of votes. It's more exciting than the national race in terms of that it only happens every 10 years that we really have a contest, I believe.
Okay. Interesting.
It is interesting, isn't it, Mark?
Yeah.
And here we didn't have an election. Of course we had an election here for school board and assembly members, but because there was one seat that no one had filed for, we had a substitute election. We had an appointment.
An appointment. And
right.
Five people interested in the seat suddenly.
Five people. Isn't it interesting how people do not want to run as a candidate, but they will put themselves out there for an appointment?
I think that is interesting.
And I think, and now I know that Tom thinks that the process is very interesting. Margaret, I'm going to let you have first stab at this, though.
Oh,
the process,
really?
Yeah, the process.
I'm exhausted on that process.
Yeah. the process of selecting. And this oftentimes is a responsibility that boards in Haines have. The assembly has had to fill seats in the past, and so has the school board. This time in the selection of an appointee to the seat, the vote came out unanimously after a
executive session
that lasted for
90 minutes.
90 minutes. Tell us about it.
Well, I'm not sure what the other process would be, except, yeah, since nobody filed to run for the seat, then they you know, have interested candidates apply for the seat, and then the school board gets to appoint a person to the seat. Mm-hmm. Last time they did this last year, they discussed it all in public, but they cast their vote in a secret ballot, so nobody knew how anybody voted for the particular candidates. And I think there were only two, right, Tom?
Last time...
Brenda Jones and Sarah Chapel, I believe. Yeah. Maybe three. Yeah. This time there were five interested parties, and they interviewed them in the public meeting, and then they recessed to executive session to discuss it, and then they came back and cast their votes in public, but it was unanimous. And some of the school board members did not want to go into executive session. It was a tied vote at first whether to go into executive session or stay in public session to discuss the candidates, and they decided to go into executive session.
I want to break in for just a minute before we continue talking about process. I think that the public has the right to know. So who did they appoint, and who is this person?
Oh.
Artie Miller.
So, yeah. And I need to have her on the show, and my name
is. She's great. And I don't know. I mean, it's a difficult situation. The executive session, I think, is one issue. I think the other issue is that the school board has to appoint somebody. I mean, there weren't enough people that ran for the seat, and I don't understand why that is when five people came out for the seat after the election that just didn't want to run in an election. And nobody even came out as a writing candidate. In Skagway, they had an empty seat after the initial filing, but then someone filed in the next 2 weeks to run as a write-in, which worked just fine because then he still got to talk about his issues and people still got to vote for him. But even here in Haines, nobody ran as a write-in after nobody initially filed for the seat. So I'm not sure who's really to put that on.
Tom?
Yeah, two quick points. It was just utterly illuminating to me that it's five strong candidates or acknowledged as strong candidates, good candidates. There's a discussion supposedly of only the negative sides, because that's where you go into executive session to discuss the, you know, the, not everything.
You discuss the
things that are damaging to a person's reputation. They come out. There's an immediate vote. It's unanimous. What happened in that executive session? You would think that with six open-minded people and five candidates – that you could, if one candidate was so strongly, and it appears that from the vote that Miller was unanimous, they can make that decision. Why couldn't that decision have been made in public? If there was a lot of give and take in that executive session, wouldn't they have come out and had a split vote? Mm-hmm. In other words, decisions aren't supposed to be made. Action not supposed to be taken in those executive sessions. How do you come out of an executive session and make such a quick, you know, unanimous vote?
Well, and this subject comes up a lot, and I have to give the media the credit for constantly raising the issue of executive sessions, reminding those who are in decision-making positions that they do have that responsibility. But I think we do need to have some kind of more open understanding, more discussion, and I don't like to use the word education, but I will, you know, about what it really means, because we seem to play with it a lot in our public process.
Well, and I think that's part of the thing. The Open Meetings Act is just that. It's something in Alaska state statute, which means it's open to interpretation. It's open to legal interpretation. You can find attorneys like the school's attorney or whoever they consulted saying, you have every right to go into executive session under this clause because I interpreted it as, yes, that's a valuable reason. I'm sure we could find media attorneys who would like to argue that point and say, actually, there's a lot of case law where in this specific circumstance, we could probably argue against that being a proper use of executive session. So it's really all about interpretation and what, you know, I mean, they can avoid it by just not going into executive session. But if they think that they have and they have an attorney's opinion that says we have every right to do that in this circumstance, that's one opinion.
Okay.
So.
And the media typically loses because we don't have attorneys and the other
we
side
can't
does.
Afford our rent. How can we afford attorneys?
Well, you know that I'm a great advocate for the media. I think it'd do a very important service in the community and in the world. We don't have a lot of time, but is there anything else that we need to just point on here for a wrap up in the news?
Tom?
Well, a lot of construction. A lot of people rushing to get construction jobs done because the winter is coming a little sooner than it was. Also, in the past 2 weeks, we lost a much-loved fisherman, Ted Lynch. It's very ironic. It was an incredible fishing season for the guys here. Yeah. We had two tragic deaths.
Thanks. All right, and Dave Barry got sworn in, just back on the political thing. Got it sworn in yesterday, and he will be at the borough meeting on November 6th.
Which is also Election Day, so don't forget to vote.
That's right. Thank you very much, guys, for joining me today, and we'll check in with you in 2 weeks. Chilkat Valley has hosted Eagles for millennium and the Alaska Bald Eagles Festival for about 17 years. This year, November 14th through the 18th, will be the 18th Chilkat Valley Bald Eagle Festival. We're checking in today with Festival Director Cheryl McRoberts. Welcome, Cheryl.
Well, thank you.
I think I need to figure out what microphone you're on. There you are. Okay. So many people come to Haines from around the world to see the Eagles during the festival, Cheryl. But why should a Haines resident pay attention to this festival?
Well, we have some exciting speakers coming this year.
Okay.
We have Dr. Edgar Mitchell, mm-hmm. an astronaut. He's going to be our keynote speaker.
Now, I understand, is he speaking just at a dinner?
Yes.
Okay, so you have to go to the dinner in order to hear him speak.
Yes.
And will he be giving autographs like on the street or anything like that?
Is
that the only
know.
Time we can see him?
That's the only time that I know of.
Okay. And do you have any idea, like, how will his speech be something, like, inspirational? Or is it going to be, like, what I did on the moon? Or what?
He's going to talk about his walking on the moon.
Oh, excellent. Will he bring the shoes?
I'm not sure.
Wouldn't that be fun?
We'll be showing a video
okay.
of him actually walking on the moon, and he'll be talking about that experience.
Oh, that is so funny. It just suddenly occurs to me, like if he was my uncle or something, like we could go and watch home videos. Here's my home video walking on the moon. That's terrific. Okay, so that dinner is when? On Saturday?
That is on Saturday, November 17th.
Are there still tickets available
for
that?
Yes, we're at 107 of 150.
Okay. So is that pretty much how it's going for the whole festival, that you have approximately, 43 tickets left for everything or just for that dinner?
Just for that dinner.
Okay. What else have you got going for people then?
Oh, we have Carrie McLeanlin coming down from the Yukon.
She's been here before, right?
She's been here before. Mm-hmm. She's going to be talking about the opportunities that there are up in the Yukon.
Mm-hmm.
The Swan Festival, the return of the...
Trumpeter swans.
Okay.
Yes. Well, Cheryl, I was looking through the schedule, and we should comment that if you go Google Alaska Bald Eagle Festival, up comes the American Bald Eagle Foundation website,
yes.
and people can check the schedule. So mm-hmm. We can do that in the privacy of our own home. But one of the things that there's two things that caught my eye. One of them was Dan Hart is going to give a presentation called The Miracle of Raptor Vision. Now, is he going to talk about how birds see?
Yes.
And will he have, like, simulations of how birds see?
Yes, in that video. He's actually a retired eye doctor from the Air Force.
Uh-huh.
So he's very much into raptor vision.
Oh, but that sounds so exciting. Now, when is that? Can you find that on your paper? Okay, I don't want to catch you up here on this because there's so many other things that are fun to talk about. This one caught my eye. I don't know who Dr. Tal Levy is, but Bears and the Ecology and Ecosystem-Based Management of Pacific Salmon. Tell me, what is that? Is that kind of like the larger version of Amy Gullick's Salmon in the Trees?
Yes, he actually has cameras out there on the Chilkat Eagle Preserve.
Oh.
And he's been filming.
How long have they been there?
About a month.
Okay. So Dr. Tal Levy is a person who's here in Haines right now,
yes.
studying the eagles and the bears and the ecology and ecosystem-based management and salmon and all that.
Yes.
That is so interesting. Did he meet Amy Gullick when she was here?
I Don't know if he did or not.
Gosh, that would have been wonderful
with,
to have
Rachel
that.
Rachel Wheat.
Mm-hmm.
Rachel Wheat is going to be putting eagle telemetry on 4 or 5 eagles while she's here.
Okay.
So we can find out where the eagles actually go when they leave here. And we'll be able to
Don't they go
them.
To Hawaii?
We don't know. We're about to find out.
Okay. This year, will there be a Flight for Freedom eagle release?
We're hoping so.
Now, sometimes, what makes those things problematic? Why are they things that you can't absolutely commit to, aside from the fact that sometimes the birds don't want to fly?
Well, sometimes the eagles are too badly injured, and we don't want to release them in the winter.
Oh,
we want to wait until the spring, or there's just aren't any eagles that are available.
I see. So this year, what's the situation? Is somebody?
We have a couple of eagles over in Sitka that we're hoping are going to be available. One of them was actually injured here in Haines, and we're trying to get her sent back to Juneau and then sent here to Haines to be released.
Okay. How long has she been in Sitka?
She's been in Sitka for about 2 months. Okay. She was in Juneau for about 2 months.
What was the nature of the injury?
She has a wing that droops.
Well, maybe it's congenital.
Right.
Oh, it is. So, oh, okay.
she's getting up onto the higher perches, and they think she might be available.
Mm-hmm. She has special needs.
Yes.
All right. Well, okay. The other thing I noticed that was really interesting, and maybe this happened last year also, but the Klukwan Hospitality House is going to be open during the entire time of the festival. Is that correct?
Yes.
So what will that afford people? Like if I went up to the council grounds, can I go there to get warmed up?
You can go there to get warmed up. They're going to have hot chocolate, hot coffee, tea, hot soups, basically to get warmed up.
And it will be open from, what do you know, the time, like all day?
They're talking about opening from 11 to 4.
Okay. Daylight hours.
Daylight hours, yes.
Okay,
yes.
Very good. Okay. So what can we here in Haines do to help to make this Bald Eagle Festival a success? Do you need volunteers? Do you need participants? Do you need people to buy tickets? What do you need?
We need people to buy tickets. We're still looking for donations for our Flight for Freedom auction.
Mm-hmm.
And that helps support and help feed the eagles and helps feed our birds. We have 12 live birds now.
Will you be conducting tours through the Bald Eagle facility during this time also?
Yes. And we will have live eagle feedings. And our birds will be on display for presentations.
Earlier this year, I don't remember when it was, but I did participate in one of the tours. And I was fascinated by everything that the Bald Eagle Foundation does there at the facility. And I would highly recommend local people, Skagway people, you know, to go there to see what it is that visitors come to see. If you haven't been there yet to the Bald Eagle Foundation, it'd be great. Is there a charge for the tour?
For locals, it's $5.
Okay. So, and will those be ongoing? So like we could go to the Bald Eagle Foundation and find out a schedule for when you're going to have them?
Okay, yes. Great. And the Chilkat Valley News has been generous enough. They're going to print the schedule
in
the newspaper.
Okay.
And there'll be handouts.
Okay. I also noticed that there's a lot of local people that will be presenting during here. You have wood carving classes. I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yes.
But what other local people besides Dan will be presenting information?
Bill McRoberts will be doing photography workshops, and he'll also be giving Photoshop classes upstairs.
Mm-hmm.
Pam Randles, Anastasia Wiley, Ann Puffer will be talking about geology, ecology, in the Chilkat Valley.
Okay. Terrific. I think the best thing to do is just to remind people that this is all on the website. And
yes.
To go to the Alaska Bald Eagle Foundation, or is it American or Alaska Bald Eagle Foundation?
American
Bald Eagle Foundation. And just click on the tab there, and it'll take you to the schedule. Thank you very much, Cheryl, for coming today. You bet.
Thank you.
That it's terrific that we have the eagles here with us, and I think that I really appreciate the amount of energy and effort that the foundation puts into helping all of us to understand the environment a little bit better. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Talk Around Town. I'm Deborah Schnabel. The time is 10:21. Haines is 102 years old as an incorporated municipality, and that's young by world standards, though there is hardly a structure left that was standing in 1910. Frontier construction just wasn't intended to last, and today we have many old facilities that have exhausted their expected life, and operating and maintaining costs are robbing us of resources that we could use more efficiently elsewhere. Haines has a bumpy planning history and perhaps a throwback to the third-class borough. We haven't maintained very well either, but borough manager Mark Ernest recognized the need for a facilities inventory and began the process of assessing our capital situation. What do we need? What needs repaired? What needs replaced? What do we want? How do we do it efficiently? We're going to talk about that today with Executive Assistant to the Manager Darcy Culbeck, with Borough Consultant Lenise Henderson-Fontenot, and Public Facilities Master Plan Advisory Board Member Ron Jackson. Welcome to all of you. Hello.
Thanks, Deborah.
I thought about, shall I go one by one by one? I just thought, well, we'll just have a big, happy, welcoming hug here. I want to start right in with the survey, because that's kind of the most fun thing that people have participated with here recently in the planning process. And the Facilities Master Plan Advisory Committee sent out to the box holders about a month ago a survey. Lenise, I'd like to start with you, and I know you have a cold, sorry, but tell us what purpose that survey was, and what was it designed to serve, and what are you learning about the community in tabulating that survey?
The survey was sent out to 1,525 postal customers in order to sample their opinions about services and buildings in the Haines Borough.
And you have, so this was part of a planning process that it was, and I know the planning process, a little bit of background, I guess, for it is, I know months ago you participated in the compilation of an enormous, like 5 or 6 inch thick booklet that identified things, all of the community facilities, things that were right, that were mostly things that were wrong, I guess. We're involved in an assessment process, I guess, is really the kind of the point here. So that planning process, you know, planning, I guess, always starts with an assessment of what it is. So let's talk a little bit about that. And Darcy, you probably are very much more informed on that too. On what would you say the state of our facilities are? Generally speaking, did I characterize it correctly in my introduction?
Well, I would say that most of our facilities need a lot of work and in some cases may need replacement. And that's sort of what we're looking at with this study and why we brought in the architects that are doing, you know, the main part of this whole study being done by McCool Carlson Green. Just to kind of give the big picture, is they're doing a technical analysis of all the buildings, which is, they're compiling, you know, engineering reports on the Chilcat Center, for example, or working with the work that Lenise did and compiling, you know, all of the data up to a certain point, so we know, okay, this is where these buildings are today. And then with Lenise's work, which is the needs assessment aspect of that study, that kind of brings us the big picture on mm-hmm. trying to decide what to do next.
Mm-hmm. Ron, you're kind of a new appointee to the Public Facilities Planning Advisory Committee. Did you know what you were taking on when you came on to the committee?
Well, in the beginning, it started off kind of like a community center group, looking at mm-hmm. what might we do for a community center. And mm-hmm. then the more we got into it, the more we realized this is about a whole lot of facilities, and why not roll them all into one? So, yeah, I was a representative of the Parks and Rec Committee at that time, so we were kind of looking at facilities, and facilities are more than just buildings, particularly in recreation. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah.
And I think that's part of what makes all of this pretty complex. And I was attending a meeting of the Facilities Master Planning Committee the other day, and I was reminded visually of a game that it looks like it's supposed to be tic-tac-toe or something on a three-dimension, where you've got these levels of, you know, three levels going up, and you're supposed to play tic-tac-toe on the three levels. Because what we're really trying to pull together, it seems to me, is not only the well and fit recreation recreation movement, I guess, with an assessment from public facilities about what the state of existing buildings are and the cost of operating them and running them, and could they be done more efficiently. And Lanice, also, you were involved and still are, I guess, to some extent, to the extent that the Downtown Revitalization Committee still exists, or is it wrapped into this? There's so many elements that are being brought together. It's an attempt to pull things together, scientifically based information about the state of buildings and facilities. It's the desire or the yearning for, you know, new activities in the community that need facilities, and the desire to keep taxes lower so that we are not paying for too much oil or too much electricity or those sorts of things. So what kind of I do want to just return for a minute to the Downtown Revitalization Committee, because that had a lot of play, mm-hmm. I think, probably before the master planning idea kind of took it over. Could you speak about that? Why was it necessary to kind of morph that, or did it turn into something else?
Well, I think you're right. I think there's a lot of patterns here that all are merging. And I want to remind you, too, when my company, the professional development company, was hired to help facilitate the strategic planning for the borough assembly, mm-hmm. the issue of buildings and future of buildings and what to do with buildings also came up as part of the strategic planning process for the borough assembly, which is what facilitated then the getting together of the gigantic booklet on what are the state of all of our buildings. And, you know, I did that for the borough assembly because it was a question that needed to start being answered, mm-hmm. and that was the beginning of the learning process for me, because seeing all of those buildings, the
digging around in the bottom, underneath the floors, and in the rafters.
Well, I didn't do that part of it, but I got all the information in the end and had to compile it. And so, not only looking at all of the buildings that we own, mm-hmm. but also the different sort of state that those buildings were in was the beginning of a huge learning process for me, because I really at that point didn't have a clear idea of all of those assets. Mm-hmm. And so taking that knowledge, and at that point I was helping to facilitate also the Downtown Revitalization Committee, where we were addressing issues of buildings on Main Street and economic development in Main Street and what direction aesthetically Main Street needed to go. You know, the pattern started to become evident in my mind because all of these little different pieces that I was involved in. And then from there came the development of the facilities committee, and like you said, it just started growing. And I think what happened was everyone realized that we didn't have one question that needed to be mm-hmm. answered. We had several questions mm-hmm. that needed to be mm-hmm. answered in order for us to go forward with some really strong leadership and some vision of where we want everything to go. Mm-hmm.
Now, Ron, you were on the committee that was originally identified for the community center. Tell me what happened in that process, because what came out of it, you were that committee was put together to hire a consultant or architect to help build a community center. Did you guys all go into a room and say, what in the world's a community center?
That was one question a lot of people had, and it's many things to many people. You know,
right. I mean, I admit, when I did the survey, and it asked about a recreation center, and it also had swimming pool, I mean, I thought, well, in my recreation center, the swimming pool is in the recreation center. What's this? Why is there two separate things here? I think it's interesting. You know, everybody has a different picture in their mind about what's being asked.
Exactly. So, early in that process, the community center became administrative offices for the borough, and another thing, and maybe a basketball gymnasium, and
right into yoga build. You know, place to do yoga.
Yeah. So that question came up. What uh-huh. you know, what are we talking about here? Okay. And at the same time, this facilities awareness of all the problems mm-hmm. was coming up mm-hmm. at that same time. Mm-hmm. So,
well, that leads me to ask Lanice, and though the survey was okay, compare that for me. The survey really didn't help us to get any closer to knowing what a community center was or a recreation center, but it did help you to figure out something mm-hmm. about a recreation center as a concept, but it didn't define it. So, could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I want to say a couple of things about the survey. And We sent 1,525 out, and our goal was to get 307 back, and we exceeded that goal. We got 335 back to tabulate, and I was really pleasantly surprised at the time and care that the public took in filling out that survey. They did a fantastic job. There was lots of ideas. There was lots of comments. Procedurally, they did a great job with it. And in the end, the return that we got, I think we need to really applaud our community for taking the time and the care to do it, because they did a fantastic job.
People love to be asked their opinion.
Yeah, it was really –
we all do.
And, you know, I didn't expect to enjoy tabulating it as much as I did.
Sure,
it was really interesting for me. It was mm-hmm. it was really quite remarkable. And so the things that – we have to remember about the mail survey is that it's not meant to be a standalone document. It's okay. a support document for these other pieces of the project that McCool, Carlson, and Green are collecting. Mm-hmm. They're collecting a pretty extensive survey of department heads and directors of facilities in the borough. They did the technical analysis that Darcy talked about, where they're looking at engineering components and code issues and all of that type of thing. And so the public opinion part of it is an important piece that McCool, Carlson, and Green always uses when they're working on a project like this, but it's not the only piece.
Okay.
And so what we were trying to do is to start the process of figuring out the things that are important to people in our community. And I think that the public did a very good job. There's a very strong voice on the survey, very consistent voice on the survey, and they did a really good job of giving us that voice. And I felt like there was several very strong patterns in there that hopefully combined with those other elements will start to help us again go forward with a vision and some leadership choices.
Okay. And so let's just put it out there. What is that strong voice? If you had to, let's say you're on an airplane going somewhere and they say, so what kind of town is Haines? I mean, you know, relative to the survey.
I think that the voice was very logical. It was conservative. It was very linear and easily communicated. I mean, all of those things were really good for me. The comments that were written were easily understandable, which was really nice. If you've looked at the survey, which, by the way, is on the borough website, and everyone can click on it and look at it in its entirety if they want to. But the thing that came out very strong in the survey is that our fire, ambulance, and police services and building is a top priority for the public. They feel very strongly about those services and the housing of those services.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We're a pretty practical group of people.
Yeah, it was practical.
Well, I don't know if I'd like that or not. I want to have my 2 feet on the ground, but I also – and I think maybe that's part of it too. We do want things to be better. And Darcy, in talking with you, I'm not asking you to make any kind of an official representation right now, but I think that one of the things that you as a member of the community speak to a lot of times is the value of those things that aren't necessarily police stations and fire halls, but you know, an advocate for those things that people come to a community and say, wow, they have a swimming pool, or wow, there's a museum. I mean, I'll never forget that the Klutz, remember, they're the superintendent of school. Daryl was the principal, and she was a teacher. And I remember once she told me, well, we came to Haines because we just loved the museum and the library. And I thought, wow, you know, people make those choices. So, Darcy, could you expand a little bit on you know, some of why your energy kind of goes towards these kinds of planning efforts?
Wow. You might need a whole other talk show for this. But
no, I'll give you 3 minutes.
Okay. Well, there's – this is
– But it's part of it. Yeah, I mean, it's part of what we're trying to do.
Well, first of all, right now what we're trying to do on this study, just stay on this, is that Jason's looking at making a business case, an economic
Jason
decision.
Jason is from McCool and Associates.
Right. Okay. And, I mean, Lanisa's survey showed that people really want, you know, either no new buildings. They don't want to spend money just randomly. And so what Jason's doing for us is looking at the buildings and saying, you know, the human resource building, for example, the preschool, it's a 100-year-old building. It costs a lot to just heat it. It's got old windows. It's got old boilers. It's you know, maybe it's smarter. The business case would be, you know, you're going to spend X hundreds of thousands of dollars over the next 30 mm-hmm. years in this building. You might be better off saying spend $1 million now and build a brand new efficient building that maybe houses something else with it, mm-hmm. and that you'll save money in the long run, and you'll have a brand new building that's going to have way less operations and maintenance costs. Mm-hmm. And so that's the business case, and we'll be, I'm sure, discussing this. Side note plug, we have a meeting on the 26th of November when Jason's going to come to town to mm-hmm. discuss this in the public forum, mm-hmm. so keep an eye out for that. So that's what we're doing right now. It's an economic analysis does it make sense to spend money on the Chilkat Center? Does it make sense to build a new public safety building? And that's kind of part of this. Well,
right. One of the things that I thought that I think that our response with the Chilkat Center is a really interesting study in a way. A couple of years ago, I know that the borough did an unofficial kind of just cast out their survey. I think Gila kind of handled it by just asking people to send out a questionnaire and ask people to the question, are we spending more, too much, not enough, or just the right of money on these different community budget centers, I guess. And one of them was the Chilkat Center. It was really interesting to me that most of the facilities at that time, and this was a couple of years ago, most facilities, you know, did the bell curve thing. Most of the people thought we were spending just the right of money on every single facility except two. One of them was the museum and one of them was the Chilkat Center. And in that case, it was exactly the opposite bell curve, meaning very few people thought that we were spending just the right amount of money, and a whole bunch of people thought we were spending way too much, and a whole bunch of people thought we were spending way too little. And, you know, what that indicates is that we have, you know, a division of attitude, you know, on those particular buildings. Now, what's fascinating to me is that in this survey, I saw the results. The Chilkat Center has inched its way up. I don't know if it's because it's a different community, you know, has changed its mind, different people answering the questions, but I think it's probably a couple of things, and this is what happens, the dynamics in the community. I think that, and I'll just go on a limb here, the fact that the arts group is very, very active, and this building is used a lot for activities that people are much more engaged in. So there's more usage of the building. The fact that we've done incremental improvements. And since they're incremental improvements, some people will call them Band-Aids. And I think that Brian Lemke's point was really interesting, because the assembly said, we want to spend $50,000 to hire an engineer to tell us how to put a new roof on the building, because the building was reportedly falling apart. Brian said, let's not waste money on an engineer. We know darn well that we need to put a roof on it. Let's just take the $50,000 and put the roof on it. And now we have a roof. So we're just, you know, a little bit at a time doing it. Is that what is the tipping point, I wonder, you know, that makes people say, wait a minute, maybe this is something that we want. Then on the other hand, we have people that say, you know, we really, really love theater and we want that activity, but not in that building. Maybe we need a new facility. So I guess my question is, do we waste our money by doing incremental, Band-Aids, I guess, but Band-Aids on buildings? And how do you answer that question? How is McCool and Associates, or how's the community, I think, going to make that assessment of a building to, you know, in the community that people are learning to like, I guess, or love, whatever. They're developing a relationship with that building, I suppose. It's going to be tough. Can you comment on that?
I think that we're doing it. The work right now is going to lead us that direction. We're going to have an analysis that says, okay, you love the Chilkat Center, but it's going to cost you X to keep it going. And then people can decide whether X is a number that they want to spend. Right now, it's kind of like you hear on the street, oh, it's $5 million, or no, it's $2 million, no, it's fine. We're going to have a pretty good start from a professional to say, this is the cost, and this is what you could save if you did it this way. Here's what it would cost to build a new building. And then we can make decisions with good data. And then we'll still have to debate, okay, you know, what we want to subsidize or what we want to spend our money on.
And will we be, in your estimation, when will we be at that point where we actually have a document that says all that?
I think that Jason's going to have the draft to us by the end of November. There'll be a public comment period, and then he'll come back, and probably right after the first of the year, we'll have the final, a pretty good start. We didn't fund this project all the way through. The borough gave us, spent $75,000 on it. What is it going to get us plans for a brand new something?
We haven't spent $75,000, have we?
No, we haven't spent.
Allocated.
Okay, we've allocated.
Thanks. Just but want to make sure you don't get accosted on the street, Darcy. I'm right. Looking out for you.
Thank you.
Hey. Right. And I'll bet Lanice got all of that.
I wish. Right.
I would expect it. We'd have a lot of good discussion by the around the first of the year help us make decisions. And like you brought up, Brian, you know, patching up this roof, we needed to do it this year, and luckely we're now in a building.
Weren't we smart?
That was sometimes the Band-Aids better be put on or you're going to bleed to death.
Right, right. I think that the other thing that I want to just point out is that there, all of this has to do with what can we afford in the end. And I just have a need to identify that there are many of the facilities for the community are being part of the McCool evaluation. They're all in the pot, or they're all on the scale. There are other facilities of the borough that are not being considered, but it's such as the water plant, the treatment plant, the water treatment plant, and the sewer treatment plant. Those the administration determined probably could be addressed through specified funding mechanisms through the EPA. So they're not necessarily competing for the same dollars that might be out there to help us with facilities. Does anyone here have any information about Cordova and its community planning efforts? The reason I ask it was that I did go to Cordova and saw the most beautiful building that is being constructed there. And what they were doing is kind of what we're doing here in a way, which is they had a museum that was inside of an old metal structure that kind of looked like our maintenance shop on Union Street. You know, and they have administrative offices that are in another building that looks like that also. And people just said, you know, we need to have a better building. And they are moving to have it be cost efficient in its construction. It's a LEED building. And I know it has 8-inch walls, you know, for the insulation. It's not supposed to have, you know, heat issues or anything like that. But it has become a huge, huge expense in the community. What kinds of things can we do to look realistically at what we might be able to afford, considering that money seems to be tight in this economy? Darcy?
Well, I just want to add to that. So the big picture, once again, is you have the technical analysis being done by the architects. You've got the needs assessment done by Lanice. And we also have two consultants who are doing funding research for us. And so that may lead us to... Mm-hmm. You know, if you could look at this, and Jason will tell us this in a month, but we may say, hey, the town really likes the fire services and the police services. And Jason says, oh, that building is also, it's going to fall down tomorrow. You need a new one. And then Cecily and Ann, who are doing the work for us for the funding, go, oh, hey, we found a grant for $6 million for new fire stations. And they'll all line up and we'll go, yeah, that's what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. So that will be part of this equation, the third leg, if you will, is the funding sources, whether it's asking the state for help, whether it's Rasmussen, whether it's another group that might fund museums or pools or those kind of things.
Okay. So, but there's probably will at some point be costs that we're going to incur. And later on in the show, after you guys, after we close out here on this topic, I'm going to ask Mark to speak with us about the initiative that's on the ballot for the state ballot for funding of the harbor. So, we're at a really, really exciting time right now in the community because we definitely have needs, but we also definitely have wants, and sometimes I remind myself we're only 2,500 people, and we got to kind of do all of this all ourselves, and or try to. And you say in a community that you could say is pretty practical and very economical and conservative fiscally, most probably. So it does make for a pretty interesting and complex and challenging discussion. Again, when will McCool and Associates be here?
The 26th of November. and it's tentatively scheduled at the school, but we'll post that when it gets confirmed.
Okay. Is there anything else that any of you would like to add to this?
I'd like to just say a couple things about the survey for people who aren't necessarily going to take the time to go online and look at it that I think are important for us to know. And one is I want to put a shout out to the library and the ambulance services who were 1 and 2 in scoring excellent in the community in their services. And so congratulations to them. I think that's some great reinforcement for what they do. But overall, when we asked the community to rate how they felt about services in Haines, there was a very high level of satisfaction. We got very few pours. And I think it's important for us to know that most people are pretty satisfied with the types of services that they're getting from the Haines Borough. Mm-hmm. And I know that all of our volunteers, our planning commission, our assembly people, all of our committees, they work really hard and spend a lot of time volunteering. So when we have a positive outcome like that, I think it's important to recognize it.
And I appreciate that you've taken the time to say that, because it's also true for many people who are in the trenches, and I know Darcy's one of them. And anyone who is a public servant gets to your receptacle or a big sponge for everybody's comments about what you're doing. And sometimes, I know for me, I oftentimes find myself in a negative space, because there is a lot of, you hear the criticism, you don't hear the kudo, a lot of times. So it's really important. And I appreciate the fact that you brought that forward, because it is an important way. We all have to this is a problem a challenge that we have to resolve together. So we might as well do it in a positive environment than a negative one. Ron?
I was thinking about the survey results too, and I was kind of surprised by the
how happy focus, everyone is.
How everybody wants police and fire. But that makes sense, actually. When you get down to early crunch time, you get down to basics and protection, fire, things like that is the essentials. Quality of life issues come just below that, and that's what a lot of the other survey things are, I think.
Right.
It's quality of life. So that's what makes Haines a great place.
Apparently so, and I want to thank each and every one of you for contributing to that quality of life, and we're signing out on this topic of Talk Around Town. Election ballot will carry a question about bonding for capital projects. And many of those projects are in places that we'll never see. But one of them is here, and that's for the Haines Harbor Project. Borough Manager Mark Ernest is with us today for a briefing on what the bond initiative means for us and how it would work if it passed. Now, I don't have in front of me, Mark, first of all, thank you. Welcome for coming over. I called Mark at the very last minute and said we needed to talk about this, because on November 6th, I'm going to walk into a ballot booth and I'm going to see a ballot, and it's going to ask me if I want to spend, it's going to sound like a huge amount of money. How much money am I going to ask to spend?
Well, for the whole state of Alaska, it's $453.5 million. And
being a conservative, my inclination is to say no, but
sure, but well, it's a statewide general obligation bond bill, and what that means is that the state is assuming the cost of the funding for the project, financing the project through the sale of bonds. Just as a local community would potentially bond a school project, the state is going to be issuing and selling bonds for the whole state of Alaska. So these projects are really defined as state transportation projects. And like I said, there's over $450 million statewide. Of that amount, Haines Harbor project is in for $15
million. $15 million. Now, is the ballot question, and people, we all receive these fat books, you know, like pamphlets, election pamphlets in the mail a while back. If you want to check in that, if you bother to read that before you go to the poll, I think you'll see. Is there a listing? Will there be a listing so that people in the poll on the ballot, is it going to say Haynes Boat Harbor, $15 million?
Yes.
Oh,
yeah.
It will. Okay.
Yeah. And
okay.
I don't have the ballot language itself, but typically those are identified and on the ballot. And but I think it's important for folks to know that when they do go to cast their ballot for that bond, that the Haynes project is identified. In fact, it was the only project in House District 5. I wanted to also just maybe put a little bit of perspective into how this compares statewide. For the Haynes project.
Yeah.
If you do just on a per capita basis, the $450 million equates to about $700 per resident. The $15 million for Haynes is over $6,500 per resident of Haynes. So, there are other projects in there. Anchorage Roads are about $100 million. Anchorage Port is $50 million. Mat-Su combined roads and port development is about $65 million. Fairbanks is in for about $45 million, and Juneau is in for about $11.5 million. So Haynes did very well, the bill itself that created this was a House bill that Representative Thomas was instrumental in getting through the process. And he was also able to include the Haynes project on this. It was House Bill 286.
So, Mark, as I'm sitting here and I'm listening to you, and I'm thinking $15 million. For some reason, why does $4.5 million sticking to my head? What is $15 million? What's the project?
Okay.
What's the project?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. The project... The $4.5 million was a request of the governor in the capital budget for this year, there was not enough money to do the breakwater. Basically, the focus of this $20 million would be a breakwater and the dredging of the south expansion. And this will accomplish all of that.
I hope. Yes.
There are future phases of the harbor development, which includes some extension of the floats and some other improvements inside the boat harbor itself. There's plans for a boat launch that can be funded through ADF&G, but that project can't proceed unless we have an expanded breakwater. So
all of the $15 million plus the legislative appropriation of 4.5 will get us an expanded basin, right? The breakwater, the rubble mound breakwater,
right,
and dredging, but it's not necessarily going to get us the floats and the other amenities in the harbor. There will still be need for funding beyond that.
Well, we're not exactly sure how much of the inner harbor development improvements we can accomplish with the 19.5, assuming that the voters approve the ballot proposition. But whatever we can save in terms of costs for the breakwater, we'll be able to apply to the inner harbor development.
Great. Okay. Thank you very much, Mark. I appreciate it very much. And
yes,
I'm sure that we all do.
And please vote. Everybody go out and vote.
Thank you.
And here we are finally at the top of the hour with everyone's favorite part of the program. My name is...
Karen Garcia.
Welcome, Karen. Welcome to Haines and welcome to the show. I know that you're a new member of the community. You didn't just slip into town. You came with a really high-profile job. Tell us about it.
Yes. I got here about 2 weeks ago, and I'm the new reporter at the Chilkat Valley News, which has been interesting just in these first 2 weeks. I've encountered a fair amount of interesting people and interesting ideas thus far, and I'm really enjoying it.
Great. Where are you from?
Originally, I'm from Chicago. I grew up there.
I just love that you came from Chicago to Haines.
Yeah.
But you have lived somewhere else in Alaska, yeah?
Yeah. I lived in Soldotna for about a year, working at the Peninsula Clarion, which is the daily paper up there. And I've also lived in Anchorage before for a couple months back in 2009. So not entirely new to the state, just new to Southeast and mm-hmm. to Haines.
Well, now most people that sit across from me in this position say, oh, I just love Alaska. I've always wanted to come up to Alaska. Were you one of those people?
Yeah, I mean, no. I'm one of those people. I had visited here before and gone on vacations with my family, and that's why I ultimately went to Anchorage to take an internship mm-hmm. at a paper up there. Mm-hmm. And I keep leaving, and then I come back, and I just can't seem to stay away.
You are one of us, right?
Yeah. This is my third time coming back to this state.
Where'd you go to school?
I did my undergrad at the University of Montana. Mm-hmm. And I did my graduate work for my master's degree at Portland State University.
Oh, great. You have a master's degree in what?
English literature with a specialty in post-World War II American experimental fiction, which is...
Ain't that something? That is so cool.
I promise it's not as pretentious as it sounds. It might be, though.
No, but just think, we have book clubs in the town, and you are going to be well sought after if you're not already part of one.
No, I mean, I was actually looking at the book that you guys, that the book club is reading this month. It's Dave Eggers' Zaytoun, I think, mm-hmm. which is a great book, and I really like Dave Eggers, so I was excited to see a good book on that list.
All right, good. What other kinds of things do you like to do that'll keep you here?
That'll keep me here. I don't know about that. I like to hike and do all that general outdoor stuff that Haines seems to be very good for. But I really like to watch baseball, particularly White Sox baseball.
Just watch? Do you play?
I don't play.
Okay.
I might play, given the opportunity. But yeah, I'm a huge White Sox fan. I actually encountered a Cubs fan last night at the Pioneer Room, and it almost came to blows. So, but I've also...
You're feisty.
Yeah.
All right.
But, yeah. So.
All right. So, all right. Then, and that is it. That's 5 minutes. Can you believe that, Karen? We used that all up.
That went pretty quickly.
It certainly did. Thank you very much. Welcome to Haines, and we'll see you around.
Thanks.
Our guests, Darcy Colbeck, Lenise Henderson-Fontenot, Ron Jackson, Cheryl McRoberts, and Karen Garcia. The next edition of Talk Around Town will be right here on this radio station, KHNS, on November 12th. Stay tuned. This is Station KHNS, 102.3 FM, Haines, translating at K20BK, Skagway.